Hello, everyone. I'm Dennis Nance. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the Queen City Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Charlotte, North Carolina. And my sobriety date is February 1st of 1981. That impresses a lot of people back in Shelby, North Carolina, too. You know, I tell you that. They're glad to get rid of me. I'll tell you what, you know, I'd like to thank the committee and everyone that's responsible for having me here. As a matter of fact, Libra and I both. And how about y'all meeting Libra early? Stand up, Libra.
Right.
Yeah,
I see it.
Whether you want it or not, God gives you some things, whether you ask for it or not. I got my own Al-Anon. You got one?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, you got a great weekend set up, too. I was just thinking, this is one of the few times that I know all of the speakers. So you got a good weekend in front of you, and I'm going to help you by getting out of the way. Now, I usually start off with one of my opinions, but I'm not going to do that. Because I know I'm supposed to share my experience, strength, and hope. But, you know, I know stuff that that nobody else knows. As a matter of fact, if you know me well, you know I know stuff that I don't know. Now, very opinionated, and it's getting worse as I get older. And that's one of the first things I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you got a sponsor, a big book, home group, and you're 6'4" and weigh 250 pounds, you can have an opinion if you want one. Get run out of town a lot, but you know, no big deal. I'll tell you the one thing I do know. One thing I do know. Probably the most important thing I'll say while I'm up here tonight, and that's that I am sober by the grace of a loving God who manifests himself in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and a continuously growing circle of friends like yourself. And that is my story in a nutshell. I do believe that there is a distinct difference between the program and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the old timers used to say a lot of smart stuff. I didn't understand it, but I remembered it. And I look back and I remember a lot of stuff I don't understand. Thank God for that memory. Because as I stayed sober, I'm able to figure some of that stuff out. But one thing they used to say, they'd say it so fast that you couldn't catch it. They said, boy. As a matter of fact, I know now that they call me that a lot because they didn't want to break my anonymity, see. And they said, they said, boy, now, the fellowship will get you dry, but it's the program that gets you sober. I had no idea what they were talking about. But I'll tell you what. Dennis Nance didn't make a whole lot of progress until he began to do as best he could to take the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous and implement these principles into my daily life. Until that happened, nothing happened. I'm just a... you know, I'll tell you what I found out in about me. It didn't take me long in the program to find this out. Is I'm lazy. Not necessarily physically lazy. I do a lot of active stuff. But I don't take a lot of action. I like doing nothing. I got a history of doing nothing. Done it all the way through school. And, but I spent a lot of time in Alcoholics Anonymous watching people watch me. I didn't see you looking at me. I could just feel you looking at me. I knew you were looking at me. And I hated old-timers. Old-timers seemed to be smart. They seemed to be serene. They always got to the meeting early. They had cigarettes all the time. Had the seats that I wanted at the back of the meeting. I'm a bona fide Baptist. I like that back row. Get back there so I can see everything. See people looking at me because I know you're looking at me. Can't see you, I can feel you. I can feel you looking at me. And I'd watch them. They say smart stuff like So, boy, if this program ain't working around your kitchen table, it ain't working around this AA table either. Man, I hated that. Then I'd ask them questions. I'd say, well, how many nights a week do I got to go to these meetings? How many nights a week did you drink? I'd say, well, it must be like Jesus, you know. And answer a question with a question. Man, I don't know. Come on. And then I'd say, well, how long do I got to go to these meetings? I said, go until you want to go. So, well, I got them now. I said, well, if I won't go till I want to go, I want to go all the time. They said, that's the general idea. He just knew everything. They just so serene. They were at peace with themselves. You know. Never seemed to get excited about anything. These guys were so serene, about 5 minutes into the meeting, they're reading the two, and these guys are nodding out one by one. Honestly. And one night, you know, we hated them. We'd go outside and talk junk about them. You know, we all be smoking one cigarette. You know, we broke. passing our cigarette around. They'd come out there with a whole pack smoking. We was out there talking about them, complaining about them, complaining about our wives, complaining about the judges, bosses, you know, picking on you and stuff. And complaining about the highway patrol, the policemen, harassing people. And we started complaining about DWIs, getting drunk driving charges. And this guy, I think his name was Harold, he said something profound. Matter of fact, I almost asked him to be my sponsor that night. You know what he said? He said, boy, I ain't been charged with drunk driving since I quit drinking. Man, that was powerful stuff. That was profound. I had never connected drunk driving with drinking. I just thought I had a bad day. I thought it was different. Well, these guys seemed to sleep. And they'd go to sleep before the meeting started. And they would appear to be asleep until I said something dumb. Then all of them wake up at the same time. Start asking me questions like, boy, who told you that? Nobody had to tell me anything. I'm smart like that. I know stuff. I'm smart like that. Then they'd ask you, can you find that in the big book? Well, I didn't have a big book. You don't need a big book unless you plan on staying sober. I just want people to leave me alone. And then the last question, who's your sponsor? I don't have one. Why would I go out and purposefully get somebody to tell me what to do? I don't like being told what to do. Besides, I got a wife. Yeah. And by this time, I got the highway patrol, the army, judge downtown, bankruptcy court. I got more help than I need. But these old guys done something for me. Probably one of the most loving things that ever happened to me. They outlined a program of action for me. You know what that program of action was? Alcoholics Anonymous. Back then, they didn't say don't drink and go to meetings. They said don't drink and told you exactly what meetings to go to. You know why. Hang around on the back row of them, too, harassing people. And they only let me go to one discussion meeting per week. I hated that. Because I had some stuff they really needed to know. I was thinking this afternoon, I've forgotten what it was over the years. But it was good stuff back then. And should have wrote it down. But anyway. Now, I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous, didn't want to be in Alcoholics Anonymous, didn't understand alcoholism. But going to these meetings, I began to hear what I needed to hear. I heard the problem, the solution, and the program of action that brings about that solution. I go to meetings today for that same reason. To hear the problem, the solution, and the program of action that brings about that solution. Now, I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous, didn't want to sponsor, didn't, So I'll tell you what I did now. I knew I'd drank like you drank, I'd thought like you thought, I'd behaved like you behaved, and I knew I belonged in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't necessarily like it, but I knew it. And that's what began this beautiful journey that I'm going to share with you tonight. And I'm a country boy from Cleveland County, North Carolina. I used to say Shelbyville, man, we wasn't even near the city limits. That's just where the mail came from. And I'll tell you, I was born on a 13-acre cotton farm. And you know, I tell you, I don't wear a full T-shirt unless I'm talking somewhere. And this thing will be off. I can't stand cotton today, you know. Well, now, picking cotton probably doesn't have anything to do with alcoholism, but if you have the tendencies, it won't help a bit, you know. And I started having problems right off the bat. Had all these sisters around. Mom didn't have any brothers, so I had aunts on that side of the family. Grandmother only had one brother. He died real early, so that's more aunts on that side of the family. And I started having problems real quick. As a matter of fact, now these girls just seemed to take care of me. Had five sisters, one brother. He's about 4 years younger than I am. But these girls just, and I know now that they love me. But I'll tell you, I hated it. They seemed to have special stuff. Painted their fingernails, wore the little dresses with the sashes on them. See, I'm just no egghead boy. I'm just walking around looking most of the time, you know. They get their hair curled, I get mine cut off, you know. And I'm scared of everything. But see, I just instinctively knew that boys are supposed to be brave. I remember going to Aunt Trulove's house uptown one time. She had a marvelous contraption on the back porch. I had never seen an inside toilet. Mom said, "You guys come on, we're getting ready to go home. I want you to use the bathroom. We're going straight home." I didn't know what to do with that thing. But she lined us up by age. Janice went in first. Linda was standing there next. I was looking around Linda to see what that thing was, you know. And evidently she flushed that thing before Janice got up off of it, you know. So Janice came running out the door with her panties around her ankles, you know, and I didn't have to use the bathroom no more. Didn't mind right where I was. They said big boys don't do that. I was always doing that stuff that big boys didn't do. Then I started having problems when I was 5 years old. Started wearing glasses. Man, I tell you, only kid in the family wear glasses. You know, I knew that being giving me eye exercise, look up, look down, look around. You know, I was having problems trying those things. I started wearing glasses when I was 5 years old. I'm still kind of baffled by that. I couldn't read. I'm still trying to figure out what they wanted me to see so bad back then. But anyway, But they were these welfare glasses, you know, with the hooks and the loose hinges. They sit on your eyes sideways, you know. You still couldn't see out of them. And so I'm looking under one, over the other one, you know. And I found out later on I've got one of these eyes that, you know, I look up, it look back down. I got weak muscle in that eye. I'll tell you, not only weak, they're uncoordinated, you know. I'll laugh sometimes, one eye closed, the other fly open, you know. And I didn't know it did that until I was in the first grade, you know. I was in the first grade, and a guy named Albert Chambers leaned over the table. Big old smile on his face. Said, "Do that again." I didn't know what he was talking about. And, you know, I had to quit drinking in bars because that eye is the first thing that gets drunk on me when I start drinking. And I was usually some 4'8" guy at the other end of the bar, you know. And after I'm drinking, he's drinking. And after he gets drunk, you know what he does. Comes over there and says, "What you looking at?" I can't answer that, you know. So I learned the easiest way to do it is just get a little jug of wine and go on home. It's easy just to get drunk and slide out of the recliner, you know. Drink with the boys going home. But anyway, I started the first grade, and this is when I first began to have problems in school. See, I'm born between two sisters who were academically gifted. Both started school in the second grade. One's a couple of years older, one's 18, 17 months younger. And I noticed that everybody was looking over my shoulder. I guess they were waiting for me to explode into the world of academia. It never happened. As a matter of fact, it's all I could do to keep up. And it's not because I couldn't do the work. I just never wanted to do the work. I was privileged to finally get my hands on my high school transcripts after I got sober. And 12 years of high school, it was consistent. Dennis is a nice kid. He gets along well with others. He can do the work. But the last sentence was always, but he won't do the work. Well, Cleveland County was a little different back then. You know, I'm one of those classic Southern drunks, born in a good Baptist family. Dad was superintendent of Sunday school and a whole lot bigger than me, so I went to church a lot. And Dad, I believe I sat there in that church and began to perfect the very character defects that would keep me consumed by my illness for years. And I had to. It was a matter of survival. Because Dad had long arms and big, fat fingers. He could thump you into a coma, you know. And so I had to be careful. I had to plan well, you know. But I learned two things. I learned how to manipulate the old people. Learned how to act like they wanted me to act, say what they wanted me to say, do what they wanted me to do until they quit looking. Then I did what I wanted to do. Of course, I got one of those big, fat thumps. So I just had to plan better next time. You know, no big deal. The other thing I learned to do is memorize stuff. I can memorize those Bible lessons. By the time I was 18, I didn't even have to pick up a Sunday school book. Just show up at Sunday school, remember the lesson, and with that unique ability, that new acquired ability to lie a little bit, man, those old folk would say, Eldridge, you've got a fine son. And I'd be sitting there thinking, ain't he though? Tell him again, you know. But I know now those are my worst liabilities. See, I've been around AA long enough now to know how to act. Sometimes I'm on the road 3 or 4 days a week. Hadn't talked to my sponsor in 2 or 3 days. Hadn't been to a familiar meeting in 2 or 3 days. Walk into the meeting, grab a cup of coffee. Say, well, Dennis, how you doing? Oh, doing fine. Shake a few hands, smile a little bit, ease on out, nobody bothers me. And, you know, it doesn't take long to memorize parts of the big book, parts of the 12 and 12. Sound good in discussion meetings. But you know, you heard it read tonight. It didn't say rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly memorized our book. It followed the path. See, my problem is I've never wanted to take the action. I just want to look good. Well, you know, things are changing in Cleveland County. And Cleveland County was, you know, beautiful. Back then, blacks and whites did everything together. We were integrated before integration was a deal, you know. We missed the whole civil rights movement. And didn't even know, we were picking cotton when the news came on, so we didn't see it. You know, I said, man, we could have been having riots and protests and laying out of school. And we are loving on each other, picking cotton in the same field, playing in the same yard, a lot of times with the same toys, riding the same bicycle, going to the store together. So when the school's integrated, it's just no big deal with us, but I began to feel a little uncomfortable. I began, at the end of that school year, we had a farewell party at the old segregated high school. And I began to feel different from other black people. First thing that I learned at that party is that I couldn't dance like everybody else could dance. Well, I never needed to, you know. Another thing I learned is I didn't have a cool walk like the rest of the black guys had. You know, when you get about 13 and you're black, you just get a little dip in your hip, you know. I didn't have that. I've been pulling that cotton sack for 13 years and it's pulling a dip out of my hip, you know. And then I didn't understand that music they were listening to. They were listening to Martha Reed, Vandell, Temptations, Chuck Jackson. And I had been listening to some country music out of Gaffney, South Carolina. While I laid in the bathtub on Saturday night. So I come out of that party and I know that I'm a soul brother and I don't have soul. And I'm black and I'm not cool. But now that summer, we found something that would do the trick. My best friend and I were playing around in his grandfather's backyard, laid up in the corn crib to cool off. Found some of grandpa's liquid corn. And as old Edward Hawkins would say, oh, happy day. Yeah. Had my first spiritual awakening that afternoon. We laid up in the corn crib, drunk grandpa's liquor. And about 5 minutes later, things began to happen. I got that tingling sensation around my navel. Went on down to my knees. Man, I like this. I can't tell a decent joke today, but I could then. That's the only day in my life I've ever told it jokes I thought was funny. Man, I tell you, I could feel that old bootleg haircut Dad used to give me straighten up. Those eyeglasses, didn't need them no more. I was, had 20/20 vision. Seeing two of everything. Went down the road a bit, hit up on the plumbers and talk about what we do to those girls if they came over the hill. And they didn't come over the hill, we didn't get to do it. As a matter of fact, I'm glad they didn't come over here because we didn't know how to do it. And before that afternoon was over, I knew I was going to have some more of that stuff. Didn't know how I was going to get it, where I was going to get it, but I had to have some. Well, you know, if you're smart like me, you can find it. I made them all. Got some wild cherries out of the yard. We moved off the farm then. Had a little wild cherry tree in the backyard. I pulled them off, ball that stuff up, put it in two mason jars, threatened those girls. And I knew that stuff was supposed to ferment. But it had to be dark. Because alcohol won't get in it while you're looking, you know. I dug a hole in the backyard, buried that stuff. Sat on the back porch for about 5 minutes and said, "It's ready now." I think that first one was totally disappointing. But not a second one. It took me about 2 days, but I eventually got so desperate I poured rubbing alcohol in it. I couldn't figure out how to get the alcohol in it. And now none of that produced a high. Rubbing alcohol produced the worst case of gas I ever had in my life. But at least I got something out of the deal, you know. I had absolutely no idea I had any talent for basketball or being courted for basketball. And I did play a while. I drunk myself out of the athletic program in high school in 2 years, off a school bus route in a year and 19 days. Drank myself from college preparatory track to a vocational track to a general track, and barely got out of high school, drinking wine, shoplifting, and laying out of school, visiting other campuses. I'm just a natural wino. I'm one of those guys that just cannot drink. I was never successful at it. My alcoholism was so vivid back then, so vivid, that I was confronted with my alcoholism 4 times in my last 2 weeks of high school. The first of those times was an English teacher. That's back when teachers knew your family. They knew your sisters, knew your mom. Lois Saul said, "Dennis, I think you have a drinking problem." I'm thinking, you're a teacher. You're an adult. What can you possibly know, you know? I discounted that. But you know, the next 3 people said anything about my drinking were 17-year-old classmates, just like me. Sylvia Spears, a preacher's daughter, probably knew something about alcoholism. Said, "Dennis, I think you're an alcoholic." Now, I didn't mind being a wino or a bum, but I didn't mind being a drunk. I just didn't want to be an alcoholic. See, that's a white man's disease. You know. I want to be a drunk, wino, or something like that. Well, she did my history homework. I graduated. But then there was Linda Lowe. Linda Lowe penned in my annual, "Dennis, you're a nice guy. Stay out the booze and everything will be okay." And then Janice Morgan, someone who had been raised with me from diapers. Janice is so honest and so blunt, so forthright, that Janice is still not married today. You know, Janice wrote in my annual, "Dennis, someday reality will hit you in the face and you won't know what to do." That's pretty heavy stuff for 17-year-old kids. See, it took me 10 more years of drinking to see the Dennis Nance that they saw. See, that's why I need a home group. That's why I need Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why I need the 12 steps. A program that's designed to address my way of thinking. That's why I need a sponsor. That's why I need to come to meetings on a regular basis. That's why I need to be surrounded by people that love me enough to tell me the truth. Because I can't see Dennis Nance as he really is. If I've learned nothing else in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm convinced of that. Well, I've met everybody. I joined the Army. Wanted to hurt my parents' feelings. Joined the Army. Especially my dad. Dad had that kind of faith that old-timers in the program had. He doesn't get excited about other people sabotaging that which was good for him. I came home and said, "Dad, I just joined the Army." He said, "That's good. Go tell your mom. You ain't doing nothing else." Man, can't even hurt the guy's feelings, you know. Went back and told Mom. Mom started crying, hollering, rolling all over that bed. Finally got her back, teaching to mess with me. That's right. 4 weeks later, I was down at Fort Jackson crying, hollering, rolling all over my bed. I'm in bad shape, right? I'm in bad shape here. Yeah. So I stayed in the Army 8 years and enjoyed a lot of it. And I only did 6 months in Vietnam, came back from Vietnam, got married to my true love, Libra. And we had a son born while I was in Vietnam. One thing I wouldn't do, I was so selfish now, and I couldn't admit this until I got in Alcoholics Anonymous. The reason I didn't get married before I went to Vietnam is because I thought I'd die and they'd get rich. Absolutely no concern about anybody but me. But we got married and went out to Oklahoma and started doing what alcoholic families do. Fussing, fighting, chasing those paychecks, I tell you. Drinking wine. It's hard to drink wine. You know, Libra's pretty dangerous. She'll tell you about it tomorrow. She's a dangerous woman when I'm drinking, you know. And I remember going to Germany. Got back from Vietnam, stayed there a while, re-enlisted. And I was in the nuclear surety program. I was a nuclear weapons artillery gun chief. And later on went to drill sergeant school, became a drill sergeant at the end of the tour. But my job was nuclear weapons artillery. And I began to get drinking related infractions of the law. And to keep me from being prosecuted and convicted of that, because you cannot be in nuclear weapons and be a drunk, they reassigned me to Germany. While I was in Germany, I got a drinking-related infraction to law every year I was over there. Finally sold my car and walked for my last 6 months. Because obviously, the car was the problem. Everywhere we went, every assignment I had, I embarrassed myself right out of it. Libra and the kids had friends. They had farewell parties. Nobody knew who I was. We got back from Germany in June of 1977. We were absolutely debt-free. Except I had bought one of those big, long Pontiac Bonnevilles with fender skirts. And, you know, I used to wonder how they found these, how they got me all the time. Police must know what drunk cars look like. And we went out to Oklahoma. You know something? 24 months of drinking. 24 months of drinking. Now, here's two kids. Lee Shelby, North Carolina, 18, 19 years old. Get married, join Army, do this little deal. We own some land in Shelby, North Carolina. We bought another house in Lawton, Oklahoma. And within 24 months, we were absolutely bankrupt. From debt-free to being bankrupt in less than 24 months. But my drinking was uncontrollable. The Army wants to get rid of me. Libra wants to get rid of me. The Army knew how to do it. They're gonna send me to Korea on an unaccompanied tour. Made Libra so happy. They're going to get rid of me for 13 months. Two cars, land in two states, house in one. I said, well, you know, I instinctively know when people try to get rid of me. So I said, I'm just getting out of the Army. Got out. Bought Libra back home. I went out. I had 45 more days to do in the Army. And in doing that 45 days, I began to get an idea of who and what the problem was. Didn't know what to do about it. But I knew I was just as miserable with the wife and kids gone as I was with the wife and kids there. My drinking was just as bad with the wife and kids gone as it was with the wife and kids there. The only visitors I got were people who came to see me one final time. It was the guy that turned off the water, the guy that turned off the gas, the guy that turned off the electricity. Time for me to go. Kind gentleman kept that house from going in foreclosure. I salvaged $4,400 out of a $21,000 house. Sent Libra $1,300 and woke up out of my first recognizable blackout absolutely broke. Don't know today what happened to that $3,100. And that would have paid for the best treatment in one of the best treatment centers in North Carolina at that time. And that was the basis for many an argument in my household and said Libra and I had made some progress in AA and Al-Anon, respectively. So I came back in North Carolina like good drunk supposed to, writing bad checks and drinking Thunderbird wine. And Lee wants to know where the money is, but I can't tell her. She gets in the car and says, well, I'm leaving you. I've got a house in Greensboro. She left me. I got another car and followed. You know, if you're going to leave me, I'm going to see you do it, you know. Lieber got a job that week. I applied for one job a day. If they didn't hire me, my next stop was the liquor store. I didn't have time to be begging people for jobs, you know. And I was eventually hired at a local prison unit and started getting promoted fast again. I came in drunk on first shift. And I was confronted with that. But rather than fire me, they put me on second shift. Second shift was a little different. I could get to work on time, no telling what kind of shape I'd be in. So I start drinking about 10 o'clock in the morning, because that's about time the bill collectors start calling, you know. And I could really give them answers, any kind of answers. Once I got a little Thunderbird in me, man, we were friends, me and the bill collector, you know, on a first-name basis. And the special old guy from Kentucky Finance. Mr. Nance, why don't you just come and get some more money then? No, don't want the money. But anyway, yeah, I eventually ended up on third shift. And third shift was where I wanted to be. That way you work all night, drink all day, maximize the use of my time, you know. But I started having problems. I started seeing things, these little fuzzy things in the dormitory at night. I didn't associate them with my drinking at the time, but I realized nobody could see these things but me, you know. Because the inmates, and you know, this was a psychiatric unit, a pre-sentence diagnostic unit, a processing unit. Some of these guys are so crazy, they didn't know what they were in prison for. And they started writing petitions and signing grievances trying to have me fired, you know. And then I see little bubbles float through there, and sometimes I watch them, but I never said anything, you know, because I knew if they didn't see those fuzzy things, they didn't see the bubbles either, you know. So I just never said anything. And November of 1980, I was invited home for a Thanksgiving dinner. It's really one of those what we're going to do with Dennis dinners, you know. They were getting kind of concerned about my drinking. They thought something had happened to me in Vietnam that made me drink like that. And they asked me about going to church. They asked me about meeting the new minister. And I promptly started an argument, cursed him out, and woke up out of what I know now is my second recognizable blackout. Hit it back home. Left leaving the kids down there. Because if you're going to win those arguments, you got to just leave everybody. That night, I had the moment of clarity. I think I've had that brief moment of clarity. I began to reflect on a letter we had gotten in Germany in 1976. Lieber's uncle, a guy they called Big Dan W., had gotten sober in this strange thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, Dan was the town drunk throughout our whole childhood. He walked the streets, walking down the road some Saturday afternoon, could barely make it. Sometimes he'd rest on our porch before he went on down the road. Pick fights with Dad. And this thing was so, it was, everybody just thought so well of it that they wrote us in Germany to tell us. And I'm thinking, and see, Dan is, now he's sober, courting heavy. I don't know whether he was married at that time or not. Has a driver's license, has a car, and is working in the mental health field in the UNC Chapel Hill area, around the colleges. And I'm thinking, maybe I'll ask Dan about this thing when I get home. But I get home, and you know what I know? I know how to quit drinking. Never had done it before, but I can quit myself. I think God had begun to work in my life a long time before I recognized it. Dan called and Dan dropped by. Dan came by. Trying to be nice, I said, Dan, come on in and make yourself at home. Don't tell drunks that. They'll do it. Dan took off his shoes, laid on the couch, and went to sleep. I hated people that could do that. So I went out to check my car. It didn't look like it was damaged or anything. But on the way back in, I looked in Dan's car, and Dan had a big book, big blue book, faded out book. You could barely make out Alcoholics Anonymous on it. I tried to steal Dan's book. Another thing I know about Dennis Nance is I have trouble asking for the help I need. I have trouble saying, I need help. I have trouble saying, please help me. I went in. So Dan, tell me about this thing called alcoholism. Now, that's what Dan had been waiting for. Dan got up off that sofa and talked for what seemed like 2 hours. I know now it's probably no more than 10 minutes. Finally, Dan said, "Dennis, if I dial a number, will you talk?" I said, "Big Dan, if you shut up, I'll talk." And they sent me to a guy named James Monday morning. Went down to James. James was a strange-looking guy. James was a black guy, neatly shaven. Had a haircut, shirt tail in, and gray pants, tan shoes, necktie. Looked shirt starched in his collar. People I hung around didn't look like that. Dan and James shared openly about his alcoholism. People I hung around didn't tell it on themselves like that. We talked about other people. He talked about being locked up. He talked about getting DWIs, abusing his wife, neglecting his kids, not paying his bills. He talked about the stuff I had been doing. Man, I didn't trust this guy. I'm not telling him anything. Gave me a little test with 20 questions on it. I passed the test. Didn't even know, I didn't even study for it. Man, I wanted out of there bad. Before I could get to the door, he said, "Wait a minute, Dennis. If you're going to stay sober, you're going to need this book." Had a brand new big book. Still had the paper cover on it. That's what I wanted. So I could go home, lay across my bed, read this book, and not have to come to meetings like you poor people. Because after all, I was not that bad. And then little Rosalie said, "James, are you going to ask him? Did you forget to ask him?" I said, "Oh, man, now they want some money. And they asked her, "Dennis, do you think your wife and kids will come in for counseling?" Man, I knew they would. Didn't want them to. Just can't trust people like that. See, I knew Lever was just waiting to get in front of somebody to tell them about me. And our children, I don't know, I think they were either five and seven or six and eight. But anyway, you can't trust kids that young. They'll tell the truth if you're not careful. You know? You don't want people like that in there. And, man, Lever went to a couple of those sessions and went right into Alabama. Kids started snitching. I kept them saying, "Daddy's friends came over and they were drinking, but Daddy wasn't drinking." And I heard Mattel snitch on me one time and say, "Mom, I think Daddy's drinking marijuana." You know. But Lever got right smart now. Come in and say, "Dennis, I'm going to Al-Anon meeting Monday night, and if you want to go to AA or anywhere else, you need to make arrangements for the kids. So you're the father, it's about time you do that." And my tactic was to shoot a booster out there, make her mad. She'd start arguing, because that's her specialty. She can argue. While she's all mad, I just ease on in another car and leave. I'd say something derogatory. She wouldn't even respond to it. She'd just go get in the car and leave. Come home a little later. "Dennis, I want to go to Bonnie Dillon." I said, "What's Bonnie Dillon?" She said, "It's an Al-Anon retreat." I said, "How much does that cost?" She'd tell me. I said, "Lee, we can't afford that." She said, "Dennis, I've been living with you. I can't afford not to." Wouldn't discuss it any further. Just jump in the car, leave. Leave me there with those little nail-biting discipline problems. Come in a little later. "I want to go to White Oak." "What's White Oak?" "I don't know, I'm retreat." "Where is it?" "Walter Barrow Sound." "I don't know where that is." "How much does that cost?" She'd tell me. "Lee, we can't afford that. Can't afford not to. Jump in the car and leave." So I started hanging around these AA meetings. So they have to learn me some of that stuff. Man, I like those meetings close to the coffee pot in the door. And right between A and me and the Lord's Prayer, magic happened. 6'4" black man disappeared. Boom. Gone. I want you hugging on me, shaking my hand, telling me to keep coming back. I didn't want to be there in the first place. But after about 2 weeks, I got to feel the right side for y'all. Now, powerless over alcohol in your life was unmanageable. I said, "These people can't drink wine. That's what's wrong with them." And then, step two. I couldn't take step two. Because it implied that my behavior is not me. It might be insane. Obviously not. I thought everybody parked their car about a half a block up the street so the repo man can't find it. But I'm not insane. I thought everybody slept in the backyard periodically because they can't get the key in the door. But I'm not insane. Looking back, not one time I ever wake up on Saturday morning and see my neighbor sleeping in his backyard. Say, George, how'd you sleep last night? Because, but I ain't insane. I am not insane. Step three had God in it, and by now, as my alcoholism progressed, my concept of God deteriorated. And this loving God that was so much a part of my childhood and my survival, so much a part of me, had deteriorated to the point I thought he was out to get me. He seemed to cut everybody else a good deal except me. So I had to skip the first three steps. I started on step four. Good place to start. I heard you talk about it. I knew enough. I had never had read anything about it, but you had talked enough about it. I knew how to do it. But before I could get that thing finished, people started messing with me. You know, people just will not mind their own business. Start asking me stuff like that. Dennis, have you got a sponsor? I said, no, I don't have a sponsor. Well, you need to get a sponsor. I come to the meeting next Monday night. Have you got a sponsor yet? No. Well, you need to get a sponsor. I said, I think what I need to do is change home groups. So I start going to the east side. Oh, Margaret Galloway comes in.
Have you got a sponsor?
No. Well, you need to get a sponsor. Okay. I go home. Dennis, have you got a sponsor? I'm so paranoid now, I'm thinking about drinking, but I'm scared to go to the liquor store. Scared the clerk might ask me if I got a sponsor. I'm saying, well, you know, if it's that big a deal, maybe I need to start looking for a sponsor. So I started looking. And I had trouble finding a sponsor. I couldn't find anybody black enough. Couldn't find anybody cool enough. Couldn't find anybody that had been married 7 or 8 years. Couldn't find an All-American family. Couldn't find anybody with 2.5 kids. Couldn't find anybody with O positive blood, the right curve in the fingerprint. Something wrong with everybody, you know? So I'd do the only obvious thing that a smart guy like me can do. I sponsor myself for 81 days. Got a heck of a job, you know? Easiest time I've ever had in Alcoholics Anonymous. I just went to meetings when it was necessary and didn't read the big book at all. And, I could discuss anything I wanted to in any discussion meeting I chose to, and I had a good time sponsoring myself. But life is good when you sponsor yourself. Nobody calls. Quiet around the house. You can pawn that answering machine. Nobody calls. And sponsor myself for 81 days like that. And I'll sit in the east side meeting with Alcoholics Anonymous. And some more of that knowledge just dropped out of the air from nowhere. I just knew stuff again. I began to think, you know, I felt so sorry for myself. I used to think I was depressed. I wasn't depressed. I just felt sorry for me. I was immobilized by self-pity. Until I thought, since you can't drink, because I was the only black guy on the south side of town that was not having fun. Maybe it's something else you can use to get you over the hump. I said, yeah, you're probably right. But, you know, I knew better than to make a decision like that. You just don't go out and make a decision to use alternate substances. I had to talk to my sponsor about that. And that's what I like about sponsors is that if you have direct contact, he's always accessible. And so within 14 days, me and my sponsor up in Rutherford County, 140 miles from home, drunk and naked, you know. The benefits of good sponsorship, you know. On February 1st of 1981, I've done the only thing that I believe I've done absolutely right since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. I came back. Those old guys on the back row still waiting on me. You know what they said? Boy, we've been waiting on you. Man, I gave anything not to hear that. And that night, they had a little meeting after the meeting. And I was glad to see that. They invited me to the meeting. They finally accepted me in Alcoholics Anonymous. They invited me to the meeting after the meeting. But after I got there, I found out I was the subject of the meeting. And since that night, I've known some things. I left that night with the basis for my recovery. Since that night, I've been convinced that Dennis Nance can't keep Dennis Nance sober. I'm going to need Alcoholics Anonymous to do Since that night, I've known Dennis Nash can't replace his alcohol, so he's going to move on to some chemical. Since that night, I've known that Dennis Nash has to effect and maintain a relationship with God if he understands him or he misunderstands him. But that's enough. Since that night, I've known that Dennis Nash is going to have to obtain and use sponsorship from someone who's reasonably successful to stand sober 24 hours at a time. Dennis Nash is going to have to follow directions from that person. I woke up this morning with those same basic beliefs. Haven't had a drink since. Haven't had to enhance my sobriety by the release of any other mood altering chemical. These guys assigned me a sponsor. Gave me O'Ivy. Ivy was unemployed, unemployable. Last drunk was on wintergreen alcohol. Lived with his mama. Ivy wouldn't listen to me complain about my wife, my job, my kids, anything. He said, boy, you know every record album has two sides. I said, what are the songs on the other side of that record timeline? Man, I heard that. Then OAD came to me one night. Early in sobriety. AD come walking with big overalls of long fingers. Hey, boy, we've diagnosed your problem. Yeah, I said, I've known it for a long time. I said, now they've recognized me, recognized I'm young, gifted, and black. And AD said, boy, you seem to be suffering from malnutrition between the ears. I said, you need some soul food. You need to get busy working these steps. And I've thought about that a lot. I walked around for 2 weeks thinking maybe that AD had called me stupid. AD didn't call me stupid. A.D. could see what I couldn't see. A.D. could see that I had reached that point in my illness. But the only way I thought I could feel good is by picking up the very thing that made me feel bad. And the only way I thought I could solve my problem is by picking up more of the problem. A.D. could see what I couldn't see. A.D. could see my alcoholism. And see, that's why I need a home group. That's why I need a program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why I have to get busy putting these principles to use in my daily life. That's why I need to take the steps. That's why I need to be surrounded by people who love me enough to tell me the truth. That's why I need to work with other people. That's why I need to sponsor other people. That's the real reason why I need to be here tonight. Because I can't seem to see myself as I really am. And I need people to love me enough to tell me the truth. Well, A.D. and Ivy worked me, got me to the third step, sent me over to A.D. That's what he was about. A.D. taught me what he knew of this program on Wednesday nights in his living room. A.D. didn't tell me to pray. He didn't tell me how to pray. He turned to page 86 and 87 of the big book, and he showed me how he did it. He got on his knees in front of me in his living room and showed me how he started his day, showed me how he ended his day. You know, for an old Baptist boy like me, that's profound. Yeah, I've looked for God for a long time in Sunday school, in rebounding voices, burning bushes, lightning bolts. And here God comes to me in the form of another alcoholic bearing the message of hope. Exactly what I need. A.D. took me through the steps. Taught me what he knew of the book. They insisted that I get busy. I was thinking about it while I was getting dressed. I was 9 months sober, and one of the biggest meetings in Greensboro at that time, he came to me. Oh, Stick Wallace, the smoothest guy in Alcoholics Anonymous at that time. Said, Dennis, I've talked to your sponsor. He thinks you're ready to chair a meeting. This meeting, the chairman takes a 3-month obligation. I'm thinking, I can't do this. I don't know what I can stay sober until a year. I'll be sober 9 months. 3 months, I'll be sober a year. It's not long enough. And before I could even say anything, he said, thank you very much. I wish I could. And back then, they were so formal. After the meeting, he said, we want to thank Jim for chairing the meeting for September, October, and November. And if I may not, I'd like to nominate Dennis in as our chairman for the next 3 months. All in favor, and they voted me in, and he just looked right, and I'm sitting there scared to death. Best thing that ever happened to me. I told you we were bankrupt when we got here. All I had to give was what I could do with my hands. Sitting up chairs, mopping floors, making coffee. Had a pretty car, though, so I drove to a lot of meetings. I couldn't buy the gas. They put the gas in. They got the ride gear. That's right. That's all I had. I'm grateful for those times now. I look back. I was talking to somebody today. The thing I like best about that period in my life is I didn't trust my own thinking so much. I did what I was told. The dangerous thing about Dennis Nance today is I've been sober enough to think that I can have a decent thought and put some action behind it. I need so much to listen to the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, relationships have been repaired. You know, my girlfriend's still with me. She might run me off tomorrow, but she's married tonight, you know. And those two kids are up to be reasonable, responsible adults. Dennis has been working with UPS for some time. We have different religious beliefs, but, you know, he's nowhere near as bad as I was at that stage of life, I don't think. Michelle can't seem to keep a boyfriend. She keeps him run off. She and Lorenzo just can't get it together. But I got three beautiful grandkids. I'll tell you, they're the joy of my life. You know, all that knowledge I get from nowhere and nobody likes it, they eat it up. They eat it up. They like it. They like it. Yeah. Man, I tell you. I remember one Christmas we were down there, and I think they got a glimpse of bicycles. They caught me sliding the bicycle into the pickup truck. And Naomi, who looks like Libra and will tell you she does. So, Papa, I think I'm not going to get a bicycle. I said, look, girl, I got you a bicycle. It's in the attic. Got yours first. You know I love you. And she couldn't see it. I said, Papa, I think I'm not going to get it. And by that time, Inez is grinning. Inez has been talking since she was 9 months, running that mile. And finally, I said, look, I felt so sorry for them because they could not understand that they were going to get their bicycles at Christmas. I said, look, if you don't tell grandmother, I'll take you up in that attic, and I'll show you all that Christmas stuff. And, man, they lit up. They jumped in that pickup truck. You going to show it? Yeah, I'm going to show it to you. I unfolded those stairs, went up there and reached back and got them. And, man, they were speechless. Man, they were so nice the rest of the afternoon. And as soon as Libra walked through that door, hey, Grandma, the daddy showed us the Bible. Man, I love it. I love it. That's just good stuff. They're in the trouble all, and I see so much of me in them. They just seem to do naturally what I have to come to Alcoholics Anonymous to learn. I come in one night, and I was going to Queen Fish. Naomi was so happy to see me, she called me by my nickname, called me most of my friends. She just jumped up and said, hey, Big D, you've been in one of those meetings, ain't you? I told you you've been in one of those meetings. And by that time, Dennis Jr. pulled us out and said, I told you not to talk to your grandfather like that. Don't call him Big D. That's your grandfather. So she meanders upstairs while I'm getting undressed, knocks on the door, eases in. Hey, Papa, I know your real name. They just won't let me say it. They're cute little ideas. You know, ideas is just messy, you know. But the time you pick them up on Friday afternoon, the time Saturday afternoon comes, I'm exhausted. So while they're bothering grandmother, I ease upstairs, take a little nap. While Inez comes in, she's left-handed. Papa, are you going to sleep? I said, yeah, I need to take a little nap. Don't go to sleep, Papa. So she starts talking. I go to sleep. She wakes me up. I said, no, Papa, don't go to sleep. And she starts back talking. I go back to sleep. And I wake up about the third time, she's laying on my chest just looking at me. So what are you up to now, girl? I said, Papa, I like you. I said, yeah, you know, you just paid that college tuition, too, don't you? Then that little grandson is 15 months. I don't know what this guy just sticks to me. You know, I think what happens, I've been thinking about, I talked to my mother about this. I think that maybe Alcoholics Anonymous has mellowed me. Maybe it's taught me how to love. Maybe I'm just more receptive to people. Kids used to run from. And this guy could care less what's going on. He will stay with me. Girls are going shopping, and he's just sitting there looking. They leave, his mom with him. Well, he'll stay with me. He'll stay with me in church as long as he can sit on my lap. Biggest fit, I was doing some yard work, and he got mad because he couldn't ride in the wheelbarrow and pitched a big fit. And the guy just licks stuff, you know. He licks the storm door. He licks the patio door. I refinished my stairs and, you know, put some of that high gloss or varathane on them. He came down, found him a little paint spot and started scratching on it, looking at it, couldn't get it off. He just got it with his liquid, you know. And for it must be shiny stuff. I noticed last weekend he licked the seat belts, you know. This is a thing. These are things that I, you know, I just, and another thing too. Got friends all over the world. In Alcoholics Anonymous, I've met the most beautiful people. And you know what I think it is? I think it's the godliness. Because I know you can't stay sober unless you're working these steps like I am. And I believe that a lot of the godliness I was looking for, I've met in other people just like you. And I think sometimes about how I used to feel so sorry for myself because I couldn't drink, had to go to these meetings. And I'd sit right in the AA meeting. I couldn't focus on anything positive. I was feeling so sorry for me that I was sitting right in the middle of the solution, complaining about the problem. Why have I got to go to meetings? Why have I got to get a sponsor? Why have I got to read this book? Why can't I do this? Why can't I do that? Why have I got to make coffee? Why have I got to mop floor? Why have I got to take the steps? Why have I got to follow the instructions of the sponsor? I know people with other terminal illnesses, cancer, leukemia, AIDS, liver disorders, brain tumors. If all they had to do were the things that Alcoholics Anonymous suggest I do, you couldn't find a place big enough. You couldn't get all of them on there to store out. And here I've wasted so much time sitting right in the middle of the solution complaining about the problem. That's the real reason why I need to be with you this afternoon. Have a nice weekend. God bless you.